Justin, how do you do in the heat, man?
So I learned it's all about getting the right kind of deodorant.
Ah, that's so true.
You know what I mean? Like, I used to, for the longest time, I had this, it was like a, I think it was a Degree kind of like gel stuff that you put on you. And I thought it was doing a lot of good things, but then like for the last like year and a half, I'm like, I've been noticing a bit of the funk, down under in the pits,
I've since gotten turned on to, there's basically like for me, like, I don't know how you feel about like scents for men, but like, I usually hate the way that like any sort of like grooming products are marketed to men. It's always like, you gotta be a dude. And I'm like, that's just not
right.
Like, can I smell good?
Yeah.
Like, can I just smell good and not have it be about like being a guy?
Yeah.
But I basically any scent for men that's like smells like the ocean is like for me. So I got turned on to an Old Spice one, and it's good, but it's also $8.
Yeah
per stick of deodorant, and to me that's too many dollars.
It is a lot of money, but it, like, the stuff that I used to use, the clear coat, used to be like, it's supposed to not be like wet and have any extra like wet to it, but it's also supposed to be kind of like odorless. However, the odorless, like, I like to smell a little bit of the ocean breeze because it tells me that it's working.
Mm-hmm.
So like, if I don't smell ocean breeze anymore, I need to reapply. So like, you need this scent for you.
Yeah, that makes sense. My thing is like, for me, it's like, it's expensive, but it works and smells good and I like it. So I'm like, well, I guess this is just $8 I have to spend forever now. Every
month.
You
gotta do that every month, sometimes more, you know, like when it's really, really stinky out. But
depends on how it is. Yeah.
Now, I do fine in the heat, to be honest. I would prefer it to be 100 and humid and disgusting, where you go outside and I'm just like, just precipitating. I prefer that over the cold. Yuck. Right?
Interesting.
Like 100% of the time, because let me tell you something. Everyone is miserable in the heat. So it's like an even level. Like, you see someone, you know they're sweaty. And if they're not sweaty, they're an alien. But
yeah,
in winter,
you think in the cold,
we all suffer differently. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I have 15 layers on with heated paraphernalia on. I just hate being cold, right?
Yeah.
But I know that's in the minority. But my dog... yesterday he was doing the silly walk on our deck because he usually walks like where the shade is to go to his little bathroom spot. So he's walking safe. And then I was like doing something by our hose. So he thought it'd be a good idea to like say hi to me. So he finished doing his business and then he walks on the deck in the sun. And then he starts doing that like, like crab walk as his feet were like too hot. And then I got worried because I'm like, oh no, he's going to like sit down and then he's going to burn his butt. So then I had to like pick him up and like lift him, and I checked his paws. They were okay and stuff like that. But like, you try to explain to him shade.
Like, hey, don't do
good,
that. Yeah,
sun,
here's
bad.
How it works.
Yeah, he does not understand that. He just saw a pop. And if anything, he saw me and he was in pain. So he started running more aggressively towards me and made it worse.
Oh, no.
I know.
I'll say this. Maybe you can hear. I think like, I don't want to, I want to have like high audio quality for this show, but also like at a certain point, like I can't just die because like my window faces the sun basically the entire afternoon. After 12 o'clock noon, it just is like, it's shining directly into my window here. And then my computer gets really hot. So it's just like a lot of stuff. So I do have a fan at my feet. So if you can hear that in the audio, I do apologize, but also like grow up.
It's for your comfort. Like, we understand.
It
right?
is.
We could do stuff like if you want. If you know, you want something worse, I can eat a sandwich in this mic. I would love to eat a peanut butter jelly sandwich right now. So like, if you want me to do something worse, I'll do that for you.
Sure. I don't think so. In fact, Justin, I think it's Headbox. What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 248. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. Joining me, as always, is my wonderful friend and co-host, Justin Makovich. Justin is updating his hot dog count to a whopping 183. I'm only at 115. It was kind of a light week for me. Justin, tell me all about the hot dog challenge you did.
So
in Des Moines, Iowa.
In the last 2 weeks, I've had 14 hot dogs, which is like a hot dog a day.
Amazing.
It's pretty normal. Yeah. I was really nervous about it because when I'm like traveling, I will rarely order a hot dog at a restaurant, right? Like that's the hot dog, it's an easy, convenient lunch. So I had to think of some clever ways to up my hot dog game this week. So I was looking at some restaurants to take my students because we just spent our high school nationals trip to Des Moines, Iowa. And I was looking for some places to eat. And then I saw this one place right by our hotel and they had a hot dog eating challenge. It was a Chicago themed, the Wrigley Field themed place called Brick and Ivy. And they had a hot dog eating contest where you had to eat 8 Chicago style hot dogs for, it was like $45 for that, but you had to eat it in one sitting. So about 2 hours. So I thought, well, this could be fun. And I always I want to do something fun for the kids. It was after a really stressful day of the tournament. So I'm like, you know what would make their life probably either worse or better, depending on it. It'd be fun if I did a hot dog eating challenge with it. Right. However, I did not go in there trying to win the hot dog eating challenge. Like I had already I ate breakfast, I ate lunch, and then dinner was there. So eating those hot dogs would have been a challenge because I didn't prepare for it. But also, they were on bread. They weren't on buns, Peter.
Yeah, that's the thing. When you showed it to me and you're like, this is like bread, it's not buns. I was like, oh, that'll really slow you down.
Yeah, it was like a little baguette. But to be honest, that was the good part because it kind of cleansed the palate from that disgusting ass relish that they had on it. Because they did not have the green relish that we are familiar with our Chicago style dogs. They just had like the dill relish that you can buy, you know, at like a store, and they had it just caked on there. And then each hot dog had 4 to 5 sport peppers on there. And like those things start adding up in your tummy just in terms of like whatever. Cause like so moral of the story, I ate 5 of the 8, right? Respectable score, but like, and I also could have probably at least eaten another 1 to 2 of them, but I was also in charge of children and I had to drive a bus and I had to get us home. And I didn't want to destroy it. And I knew I wouldn't get through 8 anyway. So I stopped at the 5 because I'm like, this is a normal number. They were all like, you could tell the wait staff was like watching me, trying to take bets on me to see how many I'd get done. And at one point, they put the tray of hot dogs down in front of me. And my coworker goes, so what does he get if he does it all? And they're like, well, he doesn't have to pay for this. And then he's like, and what happens if he doesn't finish it? And then I say, we get a bunch of laughs. We get a bunch of laughs.
you make a formative memory for these kids, all right? The relish thing is a problem. I had a Chicago-style dog when I was at that metal festival in May in Ohio. And the relish, it was like a really, really, really sweet relish.
Yeah.
And it was nasty, and I did not fuck with that at all.
Right, right. And that was like the first 2 dogs were fine, but I noticed the relish. But by the 5th one, the relish was all I could think of. And then I'm literally pulling bread off the hot dogs I wasn't eating just to like make it easier to like eat. Ugh. To like diffuse a little bit of that relish. And then I looked at the bottom of my tray and it was just the sport peppers on the bottom and the relish. And I was like, should I have to finish this? They would make me finish these sport peppers and this relish on the plate. And I could not have done it even if I got through all 8.
There are 29 fucking sports peppers on those on the picture you sent me.
Oh, you counted them?
That's too many sports peppers. I showed it to my dad. He counted them. It was like, yeah, that's not that that's not good. I like sports peppers, but like that's too many.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad because you did 5. I don't know if you did. You did 5.
Yeah, I did 5, which again is a respectable.
I think it's respectable,
but
more than half, is great. So congratulations on that, Justin. Had I been there, I for sure would have done it with you. No question.
And if
in
you
fact,
were there,
consider
I might have
driving
actually,
out.
If you were there, I might have actually tried to like finish. You know what I mean? Like if you had that like peer pressure, because at a certain point, I only disappointed my students. One of my students was literally like, I'm a little disappointed in you. And I'm like, well, I think you'd probably be more disappointed if I finished these.
Yeah, you certainly don't want that.
No.
Well, Justin, I'm glad to hear you had a good time in Des Moines, Iowa. Want to tell our can I just give you a preview of what's coming up in the news and then we can get into all the good stuff?
Sure.
every game ever was released between the time we last talked. Full disclosure, it's been 2 weeks since we last talked because we did two in a row when I got back from Summer Game Fest. Now we're back. But there's a lot of games to talk about this week. That's going to be the majority of the show. And then the other big news story for this week is Marathon. Got delayed indefinitely, which I think is kind of interesting. So we're going to talk about those things and more. Before we do, you can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. You can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Every single week, those deluxe podcast producers get an additional 30-minute bonus episode. Today, we are doing a deeper dive into Death Stranding 2, a game that I have played. So I'll be able to show you a fair amount of that. So if you're interested in that, patreon.com/hitboxpod. If you can't support us there, that's fine. Like this episode in your we're on Blue Sky at Hitbox Pod, where you can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, can we go to the Metacritic roundup? It's a hefty one. It's a big one.
Let's go.
Metacritic roundup.
I think let's start with Death Stranding, Justin.
Okay.
I think that's a good place to start. A
lot happening in that game.
Yes. As I mentioned, I have played Death Stranding. I have not finished it. I've put about 20 hours into it. Which to my estimation is, I'm not like early, but I am 20 hours into a game that I would have to imagine is about 60. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Are you like mainlining it or are you just doing everything possible?
No, I, basically I'm working on some videos for IGN. I think they should be up by the time this goes live. Perhaps not, but, it is, I had to do some guides on like things you didn't know or like things the game doesn't tell you. So I had to do like sort of a lot of research into the systems and stuff like that. So I was not really like mainlining it. Kind of got to play how I want to play, which is just like doing some of the side stuff, doing some of the main stuff, you know, whatever. But on the PlayStation 5, where this game is exclusively on currently, it'll be on PC eventually, I'm sure. And I'm sure Xbox eventually as well. Scored a 90 on Metacritic based on 108 reviews, which is, I believe, significantly better than the original game. Let's see here. The original Death Stranding scored an 82, though I believe there were a lot more outliers with that one than this one. This game is good. It's a really, really, really good game. I'm pretty impressed with this thing. I think a lot of that comes down to the fact that I'm just not that familiar with Death Stranding 1. So a lot of like that game, because I didn't play a ton of it, it means that like I didn't, I'm trying to think how to say this, like, because I didn't play a ton of Death Stranding 1, it means that like a lot of the interesting things that it does have not lost their magic on me from 5 years ago. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess my one kind of question to that, and I don't know if you're maybe the best one to answer this though, is that clearly, this game is one of the games that went from being a little divisive to universally liked. So people seem to like have not been sick of the original one as they got to the second one. If anything, they appreciate the second one more. So like so far in your like playing of it, what makes the second one a better game universally than the first one?
So it's really interesting. Kojima said that while they were like working on the game, he said it was playtesting too well and he wanted to make it more controversial. Which I love. I mean, like that's it. Like, hey, that's a cool idea, right? If you are someone who wants to make something that like pushes the boundaries on video games and whatever, then yeah, like you maybe don't want everyone to walk away from it feeling the exact same, right? Yeah. But it's interesting that he said that because this game to me is a lot more like it feels like it is going for more mainstream appeal. We talked about this when I started playing Death Stranding 1 a few weeks ago, but like that game is extraordinarily interesting because like combat's in it, but like combat is not the main focus of that game.
Mm-hmm.
In Death Stranding 2, basically every single upgrade you get and like piece of new gear that you get is a weapon or something that aids you in combat. Was that how it was in Death Stranding 1?
Yeah, basically every upgrade you get is in fact like a weapon or a gun or something like that that you get.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of like other like traversal things that you get pretty early on. With fuck spoilers, there's a zip line you get, which I think is like the that's the biggest like traversal thing you get. But for the most part, it is just different flavors of weapons and items that help making your walking easier / attacking easier. But like
mm-hmm.
you don't, I never fought.
Cause I mean, this game is like, you get a fucking shotgun, and it, and then the next thing is like, oh, I'm going to level up my shotgun, and then now I'm getting an assault rifle and a sniper rifle and a handgun and a grenade launcher.
Pretty similar.
Is it? Okay. Yeah,
you could have like a ton of weapons and stuff in that game, but like, again, you're never incentivized truly to use them. Occasionally during the combat encounters, right, like you need to make sure that you had stuff because they had those, not combat encounters. Did you get to any of those like war flashbacks?
No, I didn't.
Because those war flashbacks are essentially like combat arenas that you have to play in. But they do a good job of like providing you with weapons in those if you're not like building them or like creating them. Like they'll have them laying all over the ground and stuff like that, so you can still like be efficient with it. But like,
that's how this game is too. Like any of the boss arenas, it's just like, here's every weapon you've ever seen. It's like,
yeah,
all right, cool.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so it is a lot. They have a lot of combat based upgrades, but they don't want you to combat or do combat much.
This game puts you, it has a lot more of that, has a lot more combat stuff, which is fine. It's good, but it is like, I don't think that I would not have described that first one necessarily as like a third person shooter exactly. And I wouldn't say the same thing about this, but I would say it's a lot closer to that.
What do they do to make it more like that?
Just like it gives you so many more combat options, and combat just happens a lot more often. A lot of the times you can go around a lot of the combat encounters and stuff like that. And like Kojima has talked about, like, well, he wants to give you just the most amount of options for how you want to handle things. And that's all well and good. But like, sometimes it's like, what is going to be more interesting, like, and fun for me as a player, going and doing a combat encounter or simply walking or driving in a half circle around it and then just continuing on my way? You know what I mean? So like, it is what it is. But I think that it is a lot more of a straightforward, safe kind of sequel than the original one was. And I think the original one was divisive because it was new and because it was kind of like out there and kind of a different sort of thing.
Like, how do you explain that to someone, right? Like when you're trying to be like, it's a walking postman simulator with guns and really long cutscenes.
And I'll also say this too. The first game, in my opinion, it makes you really, really consider what you are like preparing to do more. Mm-hmm. Whereas this game kind of gives you a lot of ways to get around some of the more like, in my opinion, interesting traversal stuff. So like what I appreciate about Death Stranding 1 is like, if you get to a place and you need a ladder and you didn't bring a ladder, good luck. Like you got to figure something out. And whereas in Death Stranding 2, a lot of the times like you get to a place and it's like, oh man, it'd be great if I could use a ladder to get over this ledge or to get over this river or something like that. And you're like, oh, I don't have a ladder. And then you look to your left and you're like, oh, there's just a ladder on the ground. You know what I mean? Like,
and those aren't the ones that's not like the strand like stuff where people like leave their shit everywhere.
That's not people dropping
like that.
It. Yeah. Okay. That's kind of, I mean, you're like outside the Chiron network.
Like, yes. I think there is two ways to look at it, right? Like that is not as immersive, but it's also more convenient. And I think part of the game is like, you want to have fun playing the game. You don't want the systems to be the thing that you're knocking your head in. Like if you had to run back to get a ladder, that essentially creates a barrier for you in that game. And instead of it being like, oh, I can keep moving forward, it's like, fuck, I fucked up. I got to go back and like waste time.
But I think it in not having a ladder there, most people aren't going to just like turn all the way back and go and like build a ladder and like come back. I think they're going to say, okay, I don't have a ladder. What can I do?
Yeah.
I could try and jump it. We'll see. That's kind of risky. I could have to go around. I could go, you know what I mean? Like, I think that there's a lot more interesting, like, because like the preparation matters in the first game a lot. And if you do not prepare properly, you can kind of get yourself in a bind and like potentially like lose cargo or damage it or whatever. Whereas in this game, you were just put into a bind far less often because it just kind of says like, yeah, just figure it out. You're fine.
More.
So I think a lot
mainstream,
of people,
I guess
that's what I'm saying, is where like this is, I think, a lot more approachable than the first one was because it kind of holds your hand a little bit more. It streamlines a lot of the process too. In a lot of the ways, like the menus, I think are a lot more intuitive. A lot of the like system stuff with like cargo management is a lot easier, which is cool. There's a good tweet from Gio Colantonio from Digital Trends. He says this: I think there's an interesting discussion to be had about the critical reception of Death Stranding, a total original series that was experimenting with a new thing, versus Death Stranding 2, a franchise sequel that is structurally kind of the exact same game but launching to more praise. Not suggesting that the praise is unearned by any means, but I think you've got to stop and interrogate sometimes about how something being a hyped up sequel in an established franchise impacts the way the game is received. And I think that makes a lot of sense, where it's like people know what this is now, and don't have to get on board with the idea of what it is And so they're a little bit more into it.
Now, you've specifically with the beginning of it, does Death Stranding 2 get you in the world a little bit better than Death Stranding 1?
So one of my things in my IGN video is like, hey, you're going to want to watch a recap because they have a recap. It's a slideshow. It's a fine enough recap to just say, like, here are some characters who you're going to see. It does not recap the story of Death Stranding 1. Like, it doesn't mention Cliff, like Mads Mikkelsen's character.
Yeah.
At all. And now, like, there's something to be said about, like, how do you summarize something that is, like, really, really kind of, like, twisty and turny and say, like, okay, well, I just would just maybe cut this character in terms of, like, summarizing it. But also, like, he was, like, one of the main antagonists. You know what I mean? Like,
but was
it,
he?
It skips a lot. No, I mean, not really. It's Higgs, right? It's, what's his name? Troy Baker's character. But like, he's a main character that is just, like, not mentioned. So, like, I would suggest watching something like that. To kind of get what happened,
I guess, my,
and some of the concepts.
My question is more about, like, gameplay stuff, like pacing stuff.
I think it's got a good, like, onboarding.
Yeah.
Like, but also, like, I was coming out of this, like, fresh from playing Death Stranding 1.
Right. Yeah,
I didn't finish it, but, like, I think it's good. I think it does a lot to sort of get you to in the know. It's got a really, really, detailed, it's called the corpus, which is like when something happens, it updates like the ledger for like each character and like corpse. The story so far and like everything. Like, and you can like do that like in cutscenes and everything, which is cool. But
play on the word corpse, that's funny.
Yeah,
corpse,
yeah.
Us, corpse,
corpse, us,
us, corpse, what? You.
I'll say it's not that I really care about this anymore, but it's probably one of the best looking games I've ever played. It literally starts with footage. Or it starts with, like, you're looking at the land and everything, and I'm like, wow, that's cool. There's some, like, helicopter shots that they went out and captured. And then the game starts, and it's like, go ahead. And I was like, I thought this was an FMV. Fuck. this looks so good.
That's awesome.
It really looks quite good, which, again, I don't think it really matters, but also is cool to see. I've been playing on the performance mode, the quality mode, at 30 frames a second. I think it's 30 at the very least. Maybe it's variable with my TV and whatever, but like it has been super, super solid. So I've not had any issues with it. And I think it just looks stunning. The 60 frames a second I get like some people want, but it's not a game that I think really requires it. Especially since it is so, so solid. Death Stranding 2. Recommend it. I would recommend it heartily to you, Justin.
Where does this fall so far? I know you're not 100% done, but like in the conversation for your best games of the year.
I have to imagine it'll be on my top 10.
Okay.
I'm having a good time with it.
Okay.
Can I also say real quick, this isn't a spoiler exactly, but this is just something I've been thinking about. Like, I think that video games should have, you know, like in the ESRB, like I think that there should be some kind of warning about like peril to children. And like imagery surrounding like the harm of children. That's kind of something in this game pretty right off the bat. With Lou, did they name Lou in the first game?
The baby or?
Yeah.
I forget the whole gist with that.
Okay. I mean,
it's the same baby, right?
Yeah. It's named Lou.
Yeah.
I don't know if he. It's also weird because like sometimes people get so weird about like spoilers, but I'm like, these are things that happen in, like the first like 5 minutes of this game. Like I don't like like the first cutscene, he's calling the baby Lou, so Lou is the baby, when there are children involved with violence and stuff like that, it just makes me feel weird. I'm not weird, like it's not bad, it's not wrong. I'm just saying like sometimes I would like more of a heads up of like, hey, just so you know, like. There's going to be scenes with children and violence and stuff. Does that make sense? Am I being weird?
No, I think that's an important thing. I mean, so many games tried for a long time to like avoid any kind of potential. Like wasn't speaking of Oblivion, like you can't, there's no kids.
You can't hurt kids.
Yeah,
in
you
that.
Can't hurt kids in that. And like, that's a pretty like common thing just to avoid that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Because people are terrible humans.
Yeah. I'm thoroughly enjoying Death Stranding 2. We are going to talk about it even more on our bonus episode here. I'll be able to show you a bunch of stuff. It's good. It's good. I if you like the first one, you will like this. Even if you didn't play the first one, but are into these sort of like Sony first party, obviously this isn't Sony first party, but it is like of the similar ilk of these like high fidelity Sony first party games with these narratives. Like I think give this a shot. It's pretty cool.
Would you say this is the most pretty game you've played since Horizon Forbidden West?
No. I played better looking games than Horizon Forbidden West since then and now. Okay. I thought, what was the game that the whole thing was like, it looks really good? Hellblade.
Oh, pretty good. Yeah. Well, I just asked because of the, it's the same engine, correct? Am I going crazy here?
I think it is the same engine. It looks significantly different.
Cause also
this is like the cat's out of the bag with this now that like reviews and stuff are out. And this was like a thing in the previews as well. I'm just going to say like, if you don't want to be spoiled about this game at all, like skip ahead a few minutes here, but like it's set in Australia.
Oi!
And so like that looks way different than Horizon stuff. It's also set in Mexico for the first little bit. The tutorial area is like in Mexico. And so obviously that looks way different than Horizon, and it looks a lot different than the setting of the first one, which is like America, but it doesn't look anything like America. Like looks like, you know, who cares? It doesn't matter, but it's just like it looks way different. And I think it's kind of cool. It's cool to play a game that's set in Australia.
Well, the all season there, right? You got as much spider.
A lot of that voice is gone.
More spider. Yeah.
A lot of that voice is in there, which is fun. But so here, Death Stranding 2 on the beach. I will have more to say. Are you picking this up at launch, or what are you doing with this?
To be honest, I don't know at launch, because right now I'm still playing with Mario Kart, and then I'm still trying to be Claire Obscure. Those are the two things I want to kind of finish before I move on. But part of this is like one of those things. I think Claire Obscure might just be put on hold because I do want to be part of the conversation, I think, with Death Stranding 2 a little bit. And the longer I wait, the think more often I'll be spoiled by it. And then plus, it's the perfect summer game for me. Just fucking walking around. I'm good for that.
I like it a lot. I think what you're saying is correct. I'm never going back to Claire Obscure because I just won't. I'm gone. You mentioned Mario Kart, though. Do you want to talk about that for a second? I've played a lot more Mario Kart as well.
Yeah. So I know you're kind of new into it, so your thoughts were a little like you didn't have so many developed last time we talked. What are your more developed thoughts on it?
Good. I like Mario Kart.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. I think that it's cool that I was talking to my friend Jake about this, and he compared it to he was kind of disparaging about like the reviews that say like it's just more Mario Kart, which is kind of was my initial assessment of like, yeah, this is just more Mario Kart. And he's like, yeah, but it's not. He has some spicy opinions about like Mario Kart 8 and the content in there. He's like, yeah, there's like a lot of levels, but like at the end of the day, like, is there a lot of content? Not really. Like, it's just a lot of levels. You know what I mean? Which is content, but like, he was basically saying that this is a lot. He likes this a lot more because the levels, he says, are kind of like old school Sonic levels. And I was like, oh, 100%. Where there's like, you can go up or you can go down, or like there are a lot of different like paths through the levels that make them a lot more replayable. And like, if you're trying to figure out like different routes and like the fastest way to get through things, he basically says that he made the argument that like the people who are saying it's just more Mario Kart are kind of missing that is kind of a huge new element that Mario Kart has never really done. And in playing it a lot more, I completely agree. I think it's really cool to say like, oh man, like I'm going to go up on the power lines here, and then I'm going to drop down, and I'm going to go under this thing, and there's a whole sort of secret area that I've never seen before, and then I'm going to come up, and like that is way faster than just doing the straight through.
Yeah,
but what do you think?
I think like the more I play it, the more I get a little frustrated with it because it doesn't reward skill in the same way that I think some of the other Mario Karts do. Because basically the skill involved kind of has to be about how you're using your powers and when you're using your powers when in the game, because there's so many instances, specifically with how the maps are a little bit more open world, that you can, if you have the right mushroom at the right time, you can take a shortcut that makes you from 15th to first pretty easily as you're going through that. And then that just is kind of on the RNG of, are you getting the right power at the right place and the right thing? And that's always been an element of Mario Kart, But I feel like in this particular setup, it is much more about that than it is about your skill in the races. And then on top of that, the skill, I don't enjoy these time trials as much anymore because I watch what people do, the world record things that they do. Peter,
impossible.
They're impossible.
Impossible.
Like it's insane impossible. What they do with these things. So trying to replicate that, it's not just like getting the right lines anymore or finding the best way to do stuff. It is like doing these almost glitchy jumps everywhere that just makes it a little like difficult. So like it's funny that I say in the same sentence, it both has a higher skill and then a lower skill set at the same time. But I think one thing that I am appreciating a little bit more is the format of how they do the Grand Prix. Because I think it is truly cool that not only is it just these maps that have like three laps that you're dealing with, but it's also like they've created these maps that have interesting traversals from map to map. And I think anyone who says it's just you're driving on long stretches of a highway, I think you're really underestimating how cool and intricately designed the roadways from course to course are in these. And I think it does make the Grand Prix kind of fun and interesting in a way because it's not just the same thing. It is much more about like using your powers. It's focusing on that change instead of it being about the skill, about like getting the right powers and when's the right time to use the powers and finding better routes through those long stretches of roads and things like that in order to give you like the desired results that you get on the Grand Prix and stuff like that. So again, I think there is some cool stuff to it. I just wish they had like a traditional Grand Prix mode. You throw that in there, I would have nothing to complain about, right? And I was talking to my sister-in-law who was playing this, and she kind of really likes the format of it with it being so heavily based on powers and when you get the powers, because as someone who is like not as skilled as some other people, she still has an opportunity to win or be competitive in a lot of these matches that I don't think a lot of people got with Mario Kart 8, because if you played with someone who's good on Mario Kart 8, they would win. like it was just because they had like the better skill and stuff like that overall. And again, skill supersedes everything, but I think this game does that Nintendo thing by making it a little bit more accessible for everyone to play and have a good time with it. And if your goal is to win every race, you're not playing this game right, I think.
I have been playing a lot of this with Elena, and that makes me go like, yeah, it's probably the best game I've ever played. You know what I mean? Cause like, she's having a great time. We really like doing the knockout.
Yeah. Knockout tour is a lot of fun too. Yeah.
And it's fun too, because she was asking me like, are you just letting me win? And I'm like, I didn't say this, but I'm like, well, of course. Cause I love you. Like, you know what I mean? Like you don't want to play with me if I'm trying to win, but I don't think the point of doing this together is for me to win. And now, are there opportunities where I do win? Sure. Do you know what I mean? But I'm like, I think it's fun if I make it close, if it gets to be close. Yeah. But we were talking about like, well, what's the point? Is the point for me to just like demolish you? Cause I could, like, I guess if we wanted to, I could, but like, that's not fun for you. And that's not like, that's not why I want to sit down and play games with you, you know? So I've had a lot more fun with the knockout course stuff than the Grand Prix, because to be honest with you, I just don't really like the levels that are in between the more traditional matches. Like, they're fine, but I prefer to have something that is a little bit more like cohesive as opposed to like just highways and like these long stretches. And they're fine. It's not that they're bad. It's just, I prefer for the more structured stuff, or if it's or doing the one big one with the knockout tour. I don't like the open world stuff basically at all. I did it. I played it enough to unlock all the costumes for the characters Elena likes, and then that was it. Because like I've tried to put more time into it to unlock some characters that I like and stuff. But I think it's cool for people who want to like explore every tiny little piece of like these worlds. And to find like all the different routes and options and stuff like that. But for me,
I honestly think the open world is just like an extra feature. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's like you need it, but like the way things were designed is that it can be there and it can be something that is accessible because that's how the courses are designed. You can basically go around all these places. I saw this rumor that I'm actually really excited about. And there's some like evidence to back it up based on like some screenshots and things like that have been shown. So there's this thought that instead of just having like a mirror mode, there might be a reverse mode where instead of going through the courses in one direction, you can go through the courses in the other direction, which I think would be really cool because this kind of allows for that with how a lot of these courses are designed. Like you just have to like flip a couple of boosts here and there to make that work, which I think could be truly a fun way to like extend the gameplay because I think mirror mode is stupid. Do you agree?
Not stupid. I'm just like, I just don't think it changes that much.
It's the left versus right. Like it's a little bit of a brain bend, but like if you do the courses in the opposite direction, I think a lot of the times that would change significantly how the courses feel to make them feel significantly different rather than just being like a mirror mode for it. So I think this game, and I'm still to the point where if we're talking about the $80 experience to this, the game is fine and good. I think this has potential by the end of this cycle to be fully featured and better than it is now on a significant level. What I already think is a good game, I think by the end of this will be probably one of the best Mario Kart games of all time.
I agree. I think, like, you know, it's hard to say because obviously, like, we're assuming that that's what they're going to do, but like they're going to just keep updating this.
They have to. I mean,
they have to.
Like the big test will be when Donkey Kong gets announced. The comes out. Like, are they going
to
have any kind of?
Yeah, I bet it has to.
What an easy opportunity to do some sort of simple crossover. It doesn't have to be like a whole world or a new map or something like that. But even if they just like, all right, new Donkey Kong costumes unlocked. I know that seems silly, but like that's enough to make it something that. It makes it a living, breathing thing when new Nintendo games come out. A new Mario game comes out, you get new costumes for Mario and Luigi. Like, those simple things could start to just add up to make it really cool.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. So we'll see what comes from more of that, but that is Mario Kart. Justin, also in the Metacritic Roundup is Rematch, football game made by Slow Clap, the developers of Sifu. This is the sort of very like intentional soccer game is I guess what I would call it. It scored a 75 on the PC, a 72 on the PS5, and a 76 on the Xbox Series X. Lots of people just saying like, hey, this is exactly what it is. It's soccer. It's cool because it is a game that requires skill, but also there's no progression, which is fine. It's just, you have the skills you have and it's just playing this game. Any interest in this?
No, I have no interest in this.
Yeah, I figured.
I mean, this to me has like a little bit of the vibes of the Rocket League in a way, a little bit. Like, that's what it looks like. I know it's not a direct comparison, but a simple game like this, I know the way the game plays looks to be fun and not just a soccer game, but you add the fact that it's soccer multiplayer based. I don't know if this is a skill set or a game that I'll be super interested in playing.
But the cool thing is, like, if you are looking for like a soccer game that is not FIFA or Rocket League, like, hey, this seems like it's kind of a cool thing that wants to actually engage with a lot of like what makes playing soccer as a like if you were to go out and play soccer and like the things you have to think about to be a good soccer player, I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
That is Rematch. Up next, FBC Firebreak. This is the first-person shooter from Remedy. It's the multiplayer shooter where you go into the oldest house and are sort of like the cleanup crew a little bit. Scored a 64 on the PC, a 63 on the PS5, and is unscored on the Xbox Series X. Justin, I've played FBC Firebreak. I've played about 5 hours of FBC Firebreak.
And this is your game of the year?
I like it. All of these reviews are fair. Basically, people talk about, hey, the progression system is kind of busted, which, by the way, has since been addressed. Remedy has like made changes to the way progression works and stuff like that, which I think is cool. But it is also this sort of thing where I think this is this type of game that would have benefited from having like a beta, and it didn't, which means that like it kind of didn't launch in a state that is exactly what people want out of this kind of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But as a way to play this, to play something with friends, I like this, where it is like kind of non-obtrusive. It's a wonderful thing for us to do while we chat. And then we will lock in for 3 to 5 minutes where like things get kind of hairy. And then we go back to hanging out. That's all I need for this game to be. If you're looking for like a really complex, deep multiplayer game maybe not, but
can you talk through the basic like format of how this game works, the moment to moment?
Yeah, so there's like six different mission types based around like basically just cleaning up what's going on in the oldest house. Like the one that is most easy to explain is called paper trail or something like that, where basically the oldest house is just covered in post-it notes, and you have to you basically have to run around shooting post-it notes and using your powers on the post-it notes to make them more vulnerable and stuff like that. And then all the while you are being attacked by the Hiss. And so you are fighting off the Hiss while also trying to complete these jobs and like fix stuff and whatever. And basically each character has an ability. There's a guy who does water. There's a guy who does electricity, and the guy who's got like a wrench who like fixes stuff. And so each person has sort of their own job as you go in and complete these things. There's other missions. There's like gathering these like radioactive like rocks on this cart and whatever. There's like putting out these sort of like ice storms and stuff. But for the most part, it is pretty straightforward. Just like complete this one mission for a while and then get out. Does it make sense?
Yeah. How many maps are there?
So basically like six so far, but they're adding more missions as the game goes. And the mission types, basically, like you can choose how deep you want to go into the oldest house. And so like if you are in level one, you basically just go into one room, clear it out, and then come back. And it's like 5 minute mission. If you want deeper, you're going to go into a second area that has more stuff. And so it's going to be longer and more difficult. And then if you want to go even deeper, you choose this stuff as you are getting sort of set up with your mission. So does that answer your question?
Basically, if you start in the first area, you can go all the way to the last area?
If you have that selected as
what you want to do.
Yeah.
But you can just start on the third area and then go all the way to the end if you want.
No. Sorry. Basically, like, it is linear where it's like, okay, area one, area two, area three, area four. If the mission is going to be going into all four of them, you start at one, clear it, go to number two, clear it, three, clear it, four, clear it, and then come back. And there's, like, bosses and stuff like that along the way and whatever. But you are going to always be starting in the same place for okay. that one mission type.
And then for like the different mission types, are they dependent on the maps, or can you play all those mission types in each map?
No, it's dependent on the map.
Okay,
so basically the mission type is the map that you're choosing.
So yeah. When you say new mission types, they're basically adding new areas and stuff like that.
Yeah, and then that where you will be doing different things, but at the end of the day, it's all pretty simple. Like go to this thing, fix this thing, or go to this thing, clear this all out.
Is there a specific mission type that you dread playing?
We haven't done all of them. We've done, I think, three of them out of the five or out of the six. I like them. They're fun. It's like I said, it's like the shooting feels good. The progression, I think I have not played since they've updated the progression stuff. That was like a day one thing that they did, following releases, but reviews, but, it's fun. It does feel a little bit like busy work because it's just like, we gotta clear out this stuff. We gotta fix all this stuff.
That's truly the meta narrative of this whole.
But I mean, that's kind of what the game is. Yeah. And also, like, if you think about it, what multiplayer game is not busy work? Is Fortnite not busy work because you're just like running around, like looting stuff and then going on to the next area
and then waiting for the 2 minutes of combat where you die probably if you're my skill level.
But it's like, I think Fortnite is a good comparison because it's like you go in, you do all this busy work, and then it's like, oh, we gotta lock in, hold on a second, and then you do it, and then you get back and you're looting and doing whatever, and you're like, okay, hold on a second, time to lock in, and then you go like that. It's cool.
I hate to ask this in 2025 here, but I am.
Please.
Is it worth the $40?
That's a tough question. But the thing is, like, you probably have the option to not. So it's on Game Pass.
And
if you want it, it's on Game Pass. It's also on PS Plus, the two top tier ones. So I don't have it on PS Plus, but, you know, that, there you go. If you're a big Remedy fan and are looking for something new and don't have either of those subscription services, then yes. Is this like, is this Helldivers 2? No.
Okay. That makes sense. That makes sense too. And again, you can always say a million years about value of money and stuff like that. But I do think that having a game like this on Game Pass and on PlayStation Plus Gold or whatever it is, Premium, I do think that at least makes it more accessible to make it an easier sell for people if they want to like try it out, which I think is kind of all you can ask.
I think that it is a perfectly like it's a perfectly good shooter.
Yeah.
That is a fun multiplayer game, and if you like your friends, you'll have a good time. But if you're playing on your own, it might not be.
If you don't like your friends, there are bigger issues in your life.
Yeah, I would say then don't play games. It's pretty straightforward. Justin, up next in the Metacritic Roundup is The Alters. This is a kind of a management sim type game. Kind of, it's from 11-bit Studios, who made Frostpunk and what's their other big one? This War of Mine, which is like a depressing, very very depressing video game about like surviving in a war zone. This scored an 84 on the PC, unscored on the Xbox Series X, and an 85 on the PS5. This thing is, there were some trailers from this at recent showcases. Basically, it's about like a guy who is stranded on a planet, and he has to create clones of himself. Or it's not clones, he's pulling alternate versions of him from different dimensions out of their dimensions so that they can help him escape, basically. And he's not particularly skilled at much, but he is able to like pull out the guy who's like the gardener or like the scientist or the miner or whatever in order to build this facility and escape this place. I've heard it has a really, really, really good story. I'm interested in checking this out. I guess my full disclosure is I'm like loose friends with the voice actor who plays all the guys. I was on the Giant Bomb couch with him last year. And so I guess I haven't played this, but I guess I have some bias here, but, from what it looks like, this looks very, very interesting and like something I would be kind of into. Does this sort of strike you as anything for you?
No, I think the concept itself looks interesting. I mean, I'm just kind of clicking through a little bit. It like has those like feelings, a little bit of like Fallout Shelter with some like third person like running between it and involved with it. Here's the thing about it. It's on Game Pass, so like I can even just try it out and see if I like it or not. Yeah, so continuously like gives you those options to play these games. I think the problem right now is there's so many fucking games that have just come out that are like
a lot of games,
time intensive and like good games. Like what a good year so far, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I might check this out. I will let you know. I definitely want to, I think, play it before the end of the year, but we'll see. Just in Mind's Eye. You hear what they think?
It's a good game, right? 10 out of 10?
Yeah, currently scored an 8, a 38 on the PC, a 28 on the PS5, and it's unscored on the Xbox Series X. This is one of those, like, so bad you gotta fucking see it kind of games.
To the point where I'm like, do I want to buy this?
Our friend Alex was playing it. I saw it he was, like, online playing it on PS5, and I was like, I wonder what that's like. I really wonder. Basically, this is, like, a third-person narrative driven linear kind of game made by, I'm forgetting the name of the guy, but some one of the sort of people who was instrumental in the original GTA games, Leslie Benzi is his name, and it's bad. It's like full of bugs. The writing is terrible. Like the game does not play particularly well. It's really short to my understanding. It's just not a game that cooked well really at all, but kind of in a very intriguing way, kind of in a like you gotta see this train wreck kind of way. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah.
To the point where I am, if I can get this for cheap, this is published by IO Interactive, the people who make Hitman and all of that. If I can get this for cheap, I am interested in giving this a shot because it is kind of uniquely interesting and with its awfulness. But
it can be yours for 60 whole dollars if you'd like.
That's the thing, though. It's you know, like full price. I don't know, man. This looks weird. This looks really, really weird, but in a very interesting way. Like it's got that problem where like if you hit NPCs, sometimes they do that like spaghetti thing where they just like unravel and like turn into these like just like monsters and stuff like that. If you hit them with cars and stuff, like cars just explode when they like crash into stuff like really lightly. Apparently the story is like laughable and just not good at all. I don't know what. Do you have interest in playing this?
No, I did watch. I watched a couple of people like playing it and like the broken buggy mess of it. I also watched. I also watched the ending of the game.
No,
and it's terrible.
Did you see what happens when you beat the game?
No.
Okay, so it kicks you out into just like open world free roam stuff. And let me pull this up here. So you end up, Gio tweeted about this, and my goodness, Gio, tweeting a lot. Yeah, I'm linking you to this. Basically, let me just read you this tweet here. Hey, quick spoiler for the game Mind's Eye. But when you beat the game, you unlock free roam mode, which contains quite literally nothing, and you are forced to play as this character by default and cannot change anything about him. And then if you want to just like take a look at what this looks like, I'll read it. I'll sort of explain what this is once you see it.
Oh my god.
It's like a guy, he's kind of like a middle-aged sort of pudgy looking dude, and he's wearing this blue crop top, like turquoise blue crop top, and these like tie-dye pants, these like shorts. He's got a bunch of like bracelets on, and like written, it looks like in red paint on his belly, just says "can't drink dust."
That is like, so funny.
To my understanding, this does not mean anything. You know what I mean? Like to my understanding, like this does not like it just looks like a guy from Florida.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's wearing like a gas mask too. I don't know. It seems like I have all the context based on this tweet that like this doesn't seem like it's a character in the game, but kind of interesting. Who knows? Might play it.
That's so funny.
Because you're right, Gio, you can't drink dust. any interest in Mind's Eye?
Yeah, I mean, just as a morbid curiosity, yes. But like, it would have to be something that's like exceptionally cheap to play. Like, I don't feel like $60, $40, even $30 becomes like worth it to me. But I don't feel like this is going to be
sub five.
Right, right.
Like, yeah.
But I don't think that's going to happen this year. I feel like this is one of those things probably where they have to keep it
where it's at.
Where it's at to like make any kind of like money from it and everything like that. I just think this is like one of those examples. It doesn't matter who you are. You still have to make a good game at the end of the day.
Yeah, they announced this studio is laying off hundreds, like over 100 people from Build a Rocket Boy, which is just irritating. You know what I mean? Because, hey, the people who made this game are not the people who are the ones to blame for its poor performance and its poor reception. Of course, that is these are some executive problems. And the people who made it knew what it was. But Justin, one last game that I've played, and then we can talk about some news here. I played Elden Ring Nightreign. I bought this game, got to sit down and play it. I've played about 15 hours of it or so.
Ooh.
This is like Elden Ring Fortnite, basically, is sort of the pitch for it. And you would not believe how much like Elden Ring Fortnite this is. Like people said that, and you're kind of like, oh, ha, ha, ha. And then you play it and you're like, oh, it is Elden Ring Fortnite.
Yeah. Okay. So talk to me a little bit about the pros and cons of that conglomeration.
So let me first just hit you with like how this game works and what it is. So basically, you are dropped into a map that basically you are building. You're trying to make a build. It's kind of a roguelite. In certain ways, you're trying to make a build that allows you that is going to make you be best suited to beat a boss at the end of the run. So in order to do that, you have to explore this map and look for, first of all, acquire souls or runes rather, so you can level up. And then also to just acquire as best gear as you possibly can. Gear, for the most part, that you're picking up has like passive abilities that just are like always on if they're in your inventory. So like you may not be grabbing something that you are going to like use. You can hold up to 6 weapons at a time. You might not be grabbing something that you can actually like fully use, but it is going to be like stuff that you want as passive abilities. Sometimes it's like, hey, every single time you walk, it casts this one spell and you don't have to actually cast it. It doesn't use FP. It just automatically casts this spell, which is really convenient because like walking as in like holding the stick halfway. So you're not like fully like doing your little run.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like that's like an example of like a bonus that you get, or it'll be like, you know, plus 9% to charged attacks, things like that. So there are all sorts of different upgrades you can find. You can upgrade your Estus flask. You can like find smithing stones to upgrade your weapons. A lot of the systems from like Elden Ring are like main, like mega condensed for this. So like leveling up, for example, you do not level up individual stats. It just gives you a stat boost across the board for what you've got. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah,
are you with
yeah,
me so
more
far?
Or less, yeah.
Three-player co-op. You all get dropped on the map together. And there's no way to communicate with people other than just like contextual pings. There's no in-game voice chat. There's no way to like connect with these people outside, like in the game.
Good.
Which is good, but it's also like, hey, in order to do this, you do need a fair amount of coordination. And in order to beat a boss, you need a fair amount of coordination. And if you are not coordinated, you're just not going to be able to win.
And
so like, yeah, go
on
ahead.
Top of that, not only coordination, like the skill it takes for Dark Souls means that you need to make sure that you're finding
locked
people
in.
And locked yes. in who are good. Because I can imagine like if you just have one person going rogue, the game is going to go terribly.
I have no idea. Yes, 100%. One, because also you on your own are not going to be able to beat any of these bosses.
Peter, because, I actually saw someone beat the whole game without getting hit alone solo. So
did you really?
Yeah.
Because also the other thing with this is it's on a timer because it's like this Fortnite thing. So basically the ring constricts one time after, I don't know, 5-10 minutes or so. And then you have 5 or 10 minutes to just like run around and find the stuff that's in the ring. And then it constricts to one specific little combat arena. And if you can beat the combat arena and beat the boss that's at the end of that combat arena, then it opens back up again and you have full access to the map again. And then it constricts one more time, does a combat arena, and then it takes you to the final boss area.
Okay.
Along the way, there's bosses all over the place. So basically it repeats like twice like that. So you have full access to the map twice if you can get through. There's bosses all over the place. The pace is like breakneck. If you are not, like, you do not have the time to sit and like read and like think. You have to be moving and you have to be collecting more souls, because if you are underleveled, you're just not going to make it.
Yeah.
Now
they've streamlined level up,
yeah,
right? So it's not like you just like, it's just basically you're leveling up your character. You're not leveling up individual stats kind of.
Yeah. So basically when you go by the the Sites of Graces, you don't have to sit down to have them like fully heal you and revamp your stats and everything, or your like Estus and whatever. If you walk by it, it just automatically does it.
That's cool. That's cool.
And then when you don't sit down at them, because there's nothing to do at them, you basically just walk by and you just like hit the menu and it basically just allows you to level up. And you, if you have the souls to do it, you do it. And if you don't, you just move on. It just like across the board increases all of your stats. Now there are 6, I think, or are there 8? I think it's 8. There are 8 different like playable like archetype characters that you have that are like just like archetype. Like, this is a strength build. This is a faith build. This is a dex build, whatever. That have like ultimate abilities and stuff like that. And that all is great. They have their own like specs. And so this level scaling is done in order to best spec for those characters.
Okay.
Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. So like basically you're not in control of that though. It's based on your character.
Correct. So it's like, I've been playing the dex build guy. He has like a samurai sword, which has the
samurai,
has the Sekiro parry to it. Which is awesome.
I was gonna
basically his. So there's like 2 abilities that you have. You have the ultimate ability, which is just like your big attack, whatever. And then you have kind of like a secondary ability that you can use. And his secondary ability is just to pull out the sword from Sekiro. And it just functions the exact same, where if you parry, you can like open up an enemy for attacks. And it also charges up the sword to unleash an attack if you can get a bunch of consecutive parries.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. It's super cool. That's the character I play the most, but they have, like I said, builds for sort of every sort of thing. So it's fast paced. I really like it. but it is 50-50 on if you are going to get a group that is going to be like interested in coordinating with you or not. I ended up playing it with some friends like on voice chat, and that kind of broke the game for me because it's just way, way more fun that way.
Wait, why does it break the game?
Because you can actually like communicate about like, hey, here's the build I'm making. Hey, this is where we're going next. Hey, here's what's up.
Now, to be fair, though, I know the game doesn't necessarily create the things to do it inside of the game. But isn't that kind of an expectation for these games to like get on Discord or to get on group chats?
I guess so. I guess what I'm saying, though, is like playing solo is just like a way. It's kind of a gamble as if you're going to have a good time or not, because you don't know the people who you're going to be with and you can't talk with them or really like figure out how to talk with them in the actual game, versus like actually being able to say like talk with people and plan and coordinate is like way, 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 way better.
Yeah.
It just makes the game a lot more fun.
Yeah, I can imagine. So how far did you get? You said you played about 5 hours.
No. About 15.
15, sorry.
So there are a bunch of different bosses that you have access to, and I have beaten 2 of them. There's like maybe 8, and then see in real time, like events will happen where they add different bosses or change things around. But there are, I think, 8. I have completed 2 of them. I've gotten close with other ones, but.
And for those 8, like when you start a run, you basically select the boss that you're going to fight, right? Or is it kind of random? Okay, so
you select the boss you're going to fight, and you get to see some details about the boss, about like here's things that it might be weak, that it is weak to, basically to help you figure out the types of builds that you want to make as you go.
And then is that boss, those 8 bosses, are they at the end of the 3-day cycle or at the end of each day? Okay, so basically it's a 3-day cycle. At the end of each day in the cycle, you get like a mini boss.
Yes. And then also basically every point of interest on the map, there is a mini boss at that. If you kill, you will find the best kind of loot
for that area
from killing. Yeah. There are like treasure chests and stuff that you can open, but like they're really not worth your time. Like they're worth your time at the very beginning, so that you can just like have some options for weapons and stuff like that. But you start with a weapon. Every character has like a starting weapon, whatever. But it's the mini bosses that you fight in each area that you want to like focus on to get the most amount of souls. And then in the second day, there are more difficult wandering bosses that are like named bosses from like Elden Ring and stuff like that. Like Margot shows up, and like there's like all sorts of different like named bosses that show up that you can attack and stuff that are going to be much more difficult, but yield you way better weapons and souls. And then at the end of every day, like you said, there is a boss that you have to fight. And now those are very fun and exciting because I fought a bunch of bosses from Dark Souls.
In the end of the third one?
No. On the third day is only the boss that you select from the menu, which is, I think they're all new bosses. But at the end of day 1 and day 2, they will have bosses that will be like, sometimes it's like the tree sentinel, like the guy who is like the first boss in Elden Ring. Sometimes it'll be him and like a bunch of his like kind of goons, or sometimes it's like bosses from Dark Souls, which is kind of cool. It's cool.
Do they play the same way as those bosses, or do they give them new movesets?
Yep.
So how
maybe they have some slightly different, but like it's that boss.
How 1-to-1 is your skill in Elden Ring to your abilities in Nightreign? Like if you're good in Elden Ring, are you going to be good in this game in terms of just like combat and stuff like that?
The only thing that they do that's different is, so there's like the sprint that you have normally in Elden Ring, but then there's also, if you click the left stick in, there's a like overdrive. It feels like you're playing with cheats. It's like an overdrive sprint.
Oh, okay.
There's no fall damage in this game. So like there's like the levels are up and down. Like you can go down or up. So if you jump from the top of something and land, you're totally fine. But
what can Elden Ring learn, or the next Elden Ring learn from this game? Like, what are some of the improvements of this game or the mechanics of this game that you wish you saw in a mainline Elden Ring Souls game?
I'm not so sure, because I like those. I like the streamlined leveling system in this game, but I like it because that's what this game is. If you were to like sit down and like have to like tinker with every little bit of your build, it just wouldn't work. But I do like doing that in like Elden Ring and Dark Souls and whatever, because I think it just allows you to figure out exactly what kind of character you want to make. And I think that by like streamlining that, I think you start to lose kind of the appeal of those games a little bit, or like being able to make yourself into like a glass cannon, you know? So there's that. I like, I mean, this is just like a small thing. I like that you don't have to sit down at the bonfire to like heal up everything
just
works.
It just happens quickly. Yeah.
Just easier. Yeah. I don't know. This is interesting though, too, because like, I can't imagine if you had not played Elden Ring, what this would be like, or if you never played a Souls game, like the tutorial is like pretty basic, you know, like it's a pretty simple thing. Like my friends sort of offered like, hey, maybe, you know, like the people who I was playing FPC Firebreak with and everyone was like, hey, you know, we could learn it if you wanted to. And I was like, I don't think you're going to have a good time. And I don't think I'm going to have a good time. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if this is going to be the thing that gets you into these games. And if you haven't been into these games before, like, I just don't think that this is going to do much for you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then finally, this question, how long does a cycle take to get to that main boss, that named boss?
30 to 40 minutes.
Okay. And it's pretty like, you can't stop at all during it. There's no like break. It's just not go.
Not a fucking second. And that's the other thing is it's like, it's a breakneck pace of like, you have to be locked in for this.
Yeah.
I like it. I like it. It's waffles between being like, oh, this game is great, and being like, oh, I don't like this at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go.
Would you rank this towards the bottom of your Soulsborne rankings?
Well, that's also tough too, because like, this is just so different.
It's so different.
That is such a weird. That's such a interesting question. Like, how does it rank? I mean, like, I would say it's in the middle.
Okay. Okay.
I would probably put this above Demon's Souls and Dark Souls 2. So kind of like lower middle.
I think that's still saying something about this game. Like it still like has that kind of quality to it.
When it works, it really, 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 really works.
Yeah.
When it doesn't, it's kind of painful. It's irritating too. Cause like sometimes like people will quit when one thing goes wrong. So like I had a round where like, and if you're down one person, you're done. I had a round where we were like 25 minutes in and then one thing went wrong and one of my teammates quit. And I like look over at my other teammate as if like it was like in the Matrix. It was like, not like this. Or like I look over at them and I'm like, hey, we're still good, right? And it was like, they disconnected as well. I'm like, cool. Cool.
They just Thanos snap.
Yep. No, it was exactly like that. I was like, ah, sick. I'm really glad that this is the culture that exists in this. It is what it is. But like I said, playing with other people is like the way to go for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Justin, you want to talk about the news?
Yes, let's do it.
Not a news heavy episode, a lot of games, but some things did happen. But let's talk about the big thing here. It's Marathon. Marathon has been delayed indefinitely. The Bungie posted to their website a development update on June 17th. Let me just read this. Let's read it out loud, and then we can just sort of break it down a little bit. So thank you for not only your passionate feedback around the Marathon reveal and alpha playtest, but also your patience while we took the time to listen closely and chart our next steps. Through every comment and real-time conversation on social media and Discord, your voice has been strong and clear. We've taken this to heart, and we know that we need more time to craft Marathon into the game that truly reflects your passion. After much discussion within our dev team, we've made the decision to delay the September 23rd release. The alpha test created an opportunity for us to calibrate and focus the game on what will make it uniquely compelling, survival under pressure, mystery and lore around every corner, raid-like endgame challenges, and Bungie's genre-defining FPS combat. We're using this time to empower the team to create intense, high-stakes experiences that a title like Marathon is built around. This means deepening the relationship between the developer and the game's most important voices, our players. Over the next few months, we'll continue closed testing, including participants from the alpha, to deploy gameplay updates and test new features as they come online. Some of our immediate focus areas will be upping the survival game, more challenging and engaging AI encounters, more rewarding runs with new types of loot and dynamic events, making combat more tense and tragic and strategic, excuse me, doubling down on the Marathon universe, increased visual fidelity, more narrative and environmental storytelling to discover and interact with, a darker tone that delivers on the themes of the original trilogy, adding more social experiences, a better player experience for solo/duos, proc chat so social stories can come to life. You'll hear again from us this fall when we can share our progress we've made alongside the game's new release date. Thank you again for your patience and, much more importantly, your passion. Your continued feedback will help us make Marathon the incredible gaming experience we know it can be. Bungie. What do you think?
Oops. Like, oops. This just speaks to me that they were not expecting the game to get the reception that it was getting. I don't want to say it's like they misread the market or stuff like that, but like it is kind of like they just, the game itself, I think, is not the problem necessarily. I think there's so much more that went into this that's kind of the problem. The culture of games right now, when it's released, price is kind of probably a factor about this.
Certainly.
And I think they were hoping that with Bungie's type marketing that there would be more people interested in playing this. And for whatever reason, they weren't interested in playing this. They couldn't pay people to play this game when it was in its open betas. And I have to think part of this, they mentioned this is going to be Concord, right? But like it's in the shadow of what happened to Concord. And I think Sony is looking at this in the shadow of what happened with Concord. And I think 100%. That is the concerning thing for not only this game, but any of these kind of games that's coming out, unless you can get people. And that's why when I asked about FBC Firebreak, do you think this game is worth that much? Like, is it like worth $40? Because I think that is a prohibitive cost that people have to get around nowadays when there are so many things that are coming out for free that you can play. And even a game like Marathon, a team like Bungie doesn't have the ability to have a rough launch like Destiny 2 had or Destiny had and still get away with it. It has to be good, popular, and big from the start. And I don't think this game was going to be that.
Can that happen at all anymore?
I would think
because. Yeah, go ahead.
If there was like a Destiny 3 that came out and it launched rough, maybe. But I think even if it's Bungie doing it with Marathon,
yeah,
I don't think you're going to have those hardcore Destiny people kind of coming back and playing this. But I do think like if you have an install base, like if Grand Theft Auto 6 online, probably going to start rough. Do you think that's going to stop people from playing it?
Probably not, but I think like that's the exception to the rule, right? And this, I think, is your point,
right?
Is, like,
yeah,
because it's Grand Theft Auto.
They'll still suffer through that. They'll still deal with it, and eventually, it will become the biggest online best-selling game of all time, no matter what, because that's what people—that's the way that those games have run. But I think Marathon itself, yeah,
okay, it's based on an older game, but no, it's like a—it's a new game.
It's a kind of not new concept, but a new thing for Bungie to do. That I don't think that they can survive that because people don't care enough about it. And people like Bungie, but like I don't think people are so developer agnostic anymore. I think if The Last of Us Part 3 comes out and it's shit, do you think people are going to allow it to be like people are going to stick with it? No, they're going to not come back to it, even if it is a Naughty Dog game, right? They want to have good games, and it doesn't matter who makes it anymore. You got to have a good game.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. Do you think, like, it's interesting you brought up like Last of Us stuff, because I'm curious too, like Cyberpunk, I think, obviously is like the big thing where like, well, that game had a disastrous launch and was able to turn it around. And I'm like, yeah, but like that's a single player game.
Right.
And like, I think what people there were still people who liked that game because they had the PCs that could run it.
And the problem with Cyberpunk was its graphics and its ability to run on platforms rather than its content. If that makes sense.
Yes.
Like when people who had the biggest issues with how it played, not with how it ran, not with the gameplay.
Yeah, and like I know we talked when it came out, like we had like fundamental issues with like the story stuff,
right?
That it's like not stuff to be patched out, but that's like, it wasn't like this thing that was like, it's broken. It just, we just didn't like it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Versus like Concord. But even then, like that game wasn't like broken. It just didn't land.
Right. Like it didn't have the.
I think even though like Cyberpunk feels so recent, 5 years has been a long, it's been a long time in the industry, and things have changed pretty drastically. But I don't know. Do you think this is ever coming out? Oh, was that?
Didn't Cyberpunk still release with like a high 80s, 90s score?
Yeah, but that's because people are only allowed to review it on PC.
Right, right. But, like, I know that's part of the context of it, but still, it was fundamentally, like, if you could run it.
People said, it's a good game.
It's a good game, right? I don't think Marathon would have been released even if it was, like, running and people had it. Like, the chances of this game being a 90 that people must play, I don't think the game was that at its core. And then you add the lack of hype to it and the cost to it that you could play other games for free or other games that are more established already and stuff like that. I just think there's so many things working against it. But ultimately, as to what you're saying, I do not think there can be a game that comes out a mess anymore in 2025, and people won't have the patience to watch it get there, no matter who makes it.
Yeah, I think I agree. And especially like what you said, like no matter who makes it. Yeah, like Bungie. I don't know. Can I say this? I didn't play the alpha. I still thought those trailers made it look pretty good.
Marathon?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it has so much to do with Bungie is going to make a competent shooter, right?
Yeah.
But I think part of it is that the type of game it is in and of itself is a barrier that they have to get over. And even if the game does play well, there was no hype around it. And a game like this without people playing it is not going to survive. I mean, it's based on player counts. Yeah. And, like, I think there's probably some things gameplay-wise that were probably a little bit, not broken with it, but that weren't making people excited to play it. I mean, a game like this, too, like, you know, it's based on what your loot is. And if you start off with nothing and then you have people who have everything, it's not going to be a fun game for you to play. And I don't think it's so much as about how it looks or even if the game looks good. I think it's that hype thing. Because I'm going to sit here and tell you, like I've said it before, I thought the ideas with Concord were good. I thought there was potential for Concord to be a good game, but it didn't have enough of a player base and hype around it to sustain it into being a competitive shooter that people wanted to play.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. And you do bring up a good point, too, about like it's not that the game is bad necessarily. It's just that like the packaging of it is not coming together the right way. And they haven't been able to show off the game in a way that is going to make it successful the way it needs to be. You're right.
But I think, you know, I think there is potential for this game. Will they cancel it?
That's the big question.
That's the big question. It's going to be a cost benefit analysis. What does the history tell you? What are they going to do with it? Cancel it.
I would be surprised if this comes out at this point, right?
Right. But maybe there's that option for them to just release it as a free-to-play, but that's not cheap because they still have to pay for servers, and if people aren't buying stuff, like there's all these problems that come out with releasing it one way or another. The cheaper option is to cancel it and to just not... Well, plus all the fucking lawsuits I'm sure that are happening with all this art asset stuff, too, is not helpful.
Well, all of that and all the internal stuff with the fucking guy you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Harassment stuff. Yeah, I wonder. I mean, so if they cancel this, do you think Bungie gets shut down? I'm not laughing. Like, I'm just saying, like, that's kind of been their MO, right?
The whole of Bungie gets shut down. I don't think so. I still think they have a chance with another Destiny game because I'm sure that's been cooking under wraps, right? Like, even if it's not in a developed state, I think Destiny itself has opportunity to bring the studio back, and I think that's enough. But does Bungie have to make Destiny? Because doesn't Sony technically own Bungie? Don't they technically own Destiny then? So
yeah. Eesh.
But Bungie,
I'm worried. Yeah, I'm worried.
Bungie is not Bungie anymore.
No, not, I mean, you know, that's just how all studios are, right?
Right. But like, and I think the second, like, you have, like, Sony in charge of it, they're not the same. Like, it's...
Agreed. What's the most recent, like, successful, like, live service game? Like, that you had to pay for? I guess Helldivers, huh?
Yeah, Helldivers, I think that was a success, kind of out of
nowhere.
Over
a year ago? But would you even say that's like a AAA? I don't think, like, to me, that's like they were a smaller studio.
Right. Like, I don't think that was something that was like meant to be this AAA thing. It was kind of, I think its popularity was kind of in spite of itself.
Yeah. I mean, like I would say like Warzone, but that's 2019.
Yeah.
Or 2020 maybe. Best live service games. Let's see here. Rocket League. Nope. That's old. Once human? What is this?
One that you have to pay for.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think most live service games.
Yeah, are free.
Free to play. Marvel Rivals. Oh, that's free to play. Zelda Zone Zero, also free to play.
Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League.
Yeah, sure.
Very successful.
Very successful.
Sorry.
I mean, like Elden Ring, Night Rain, I guess, right? But
is that
a live service game? It's not what we're talking
about.
It's
not a live service game, and I mean that game, I think, is like it closed down its mainstream appeal from Elden Ring and just kind of like is focusing on the hardcore Elden Ring fans.
Yeah, I'm looking at an article. I'm not trying to like laugh at this person, but this is an article on Game Rant titled 9 Live Service Games That Prove the Model Can Work. Number one is Grand Theft Auto Online. And it's like, yeah, I guess if you just have billions of dollars, yeah, this can work. You know what I mean? Like, all of these are like, yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. The question, I think, the fact that we can't come up with an answer sort of proves the point I'm trying to make with this a little bit. But I hope it comes out, and I hope it's good, and I'm interested in playing Marathon because I think it looks kind of cool. But that's just me. Justin, Silent Hill 1 is getting remade. There have been rumors that Bloober is working on another Silent Hill remake once they're done with Chronos the New Dawn, and it was confirmed at a Konami presentation that they are remaking the original Silent Hill game, I imagine, in a similar fashion as the Silent Hill 2 remake. Did you play Silent Hill 2 remake?
I did not.
I think you did, right?
I did not. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah, I did not. But I think this is cool, right?
I think that they did a good job with Silent Hill 2 remake. But, like, there's, like, this big asterisk for me where I'm like, but I think... I'm happy for them to remake a game if it means that people are going to be able to play it. Right now, I don't know if you can like legally play Silent Hill 1 without having an original PlayStation hooked up to your TV. I don't think there's like a remaster or anything like that. But like my worry is that like these original experiences that are still good and maybe don't hold up exactly, but like are still able to be played. My worry is that like these things are sort of like taking their place, and then that like publishers like Konami are like, well, we don't need to like make that old one available because the remake's there. You know what I mean?
I think that's going to be a problem with anything, just the way video game preservation issues are. And I think one of the things that we have to remember, and I'm going to lump you into my old ass age over here. We are older in terms of like people and like gamers and stuff like that. If someone is in there, like if they're a 15-year-old is playing video games, like getting them to go back and play Silent Hill 1, even if they just do a re-release of the old Silent Hill on Game Pass or something like that, I think there's value in that.
Yeah.
But I don't think creating a significant changed version of it, not significant change, but an updated modern version of it with modern game mechanics is a bad thing specifically for that target demographic.
That is true. You're right. I'll say this too. I meant to mention this when we were talking about the games we've been playing. I'm playing the remaster of Onimusha 2.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got a code for that from Capcom, so thank you very much for that. I'm having a great time, and I'm playing this, and I'm like, this would be poison to Justin. This is poison to Justin. It's basically like Resident Evil, but samurai.
Yeah.
It's like... like the fixed camera angles and the enemies just respawn infinitely. I've been playing this, I've been like smirking to myself, being like, you would fucking hate this. You would have no fun with this at all. And like, I never heard of Onimusha until the new one was announced, and I got to see, you know, the gameplay at SGF and everything. And I knew that they had remastered this, but like, this is a game that like, if you ask me, like, does it hold up? My answer is like, no, but also, does something need to hold up to be good? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think the original Halo holds up in that you wouldn't make this game like this today. But do I think that means it's bad? The answer is no. I don't think that the original, you know, this, that, whatever holds up. But like, I do think it's like cool to be able to play them.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I agree with that too. Like there's a place for, I think there's a place for both parts in the conversation. I would never have been a Resident Evil fan the same way I think I am now if they didn't remake those original games.
Yeah.
Like if you tell me to go back and play Resident Evil 2, the original one, I can think of no worse way to spend my day.
Yes.
But playing Resident Evil 2 when they redid it was amazing. Like that is a quality game that I feel like cemented the fact that I like Resident Evil because they presented it in a way that I will play it and a way that I will enjoy it in a way that I would not enjoy the original Resident Evil 2. Does that mean we shouldn't have Resident Evil 2? No. The original. No, we should have that. That needs to be there, I think, for people to play, but also from nostalgic aspects of it. But I think like Silent Hill 1 is one of those games that I think having more people play it, and with how good the Silent Hill 2 remake was, I think critically, right? Yeah. I think this is a good thing, I think, for video game preservation in a way.
But my thing is like I think this is a very bad thing for video game preservation because Konami specifically, so like Capcom is a great example of this. You're right. The Resident Evil 2 remake is amazing. And it would be hypocritical of me to say that it isn't and that I don't like it because I do. I think it's amazing.
Right.
And I think it's a really good reimagining of that original game. But the big difference between the Silent Hill 2 remake and the Resident Evil 2 remake is that Capcom makes Resident Evil 2 available. You can play it on PS5, which is awesome. That's good for game preservation because both are available. But Konami specifically has not been good at making their older games made available on new platforms. And so, like, I don't think you can even play the HD remastered version they did of Silent Hill 2 and 3, even as bad as those were, on the PS5. I think you can play it on Xbox, but I don't think you can play it on PS5. So like Konami is going to look at is just sees this and is like, well, this is fine. Silent Hill 2, this is the one people want to play. And sure. Like what you said, like 15-year-olds, if they want to play a horror game and are like, oh, let's play Silent Hill 2. They're going to play the new one. They're not going to play the old one. But I do think Konami sees that and just goes, OK, well, then there's no point in us releasing these older ones. Does that kind of make sense?
Well, I think it makes sense. But I also think the argument goes the other way, too, because the chances of them remaking the old game, no matter what, are low. Like, I don't think they're just going to be like, oh, we're going to remake this old game. Like, it's either like the chances of them remaking or re-releasing Silent Hill 1, I think, are pretty low.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And I think them remaking Silent Hill 1, it might impact that slightly, but I think it's just the same likelihood that we'll never get to play Silent Hill 1 accessibly again. Now we definitely get to play Silent Hill 1 again, even if it's not the old one.
Yeah, but like what you're saying is true, but it's a false equivalence of like it's not Silent Hill 2. It's like Silent Hill 2 on the PS2 is not the one I played on PS5.
That is correct.
They're similar, but they're not the same. And so like to say that, well, you can play it is just not true. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I would be fine with all of this
if they were to release
the old
ones.
I'm not fine with it, but like, yes, if they would just release the old ones for me to play on PS5 so that I could be able to play them. I would appreciate that, and that would fix my problem with it. And I think that's why I think the Capcom way of doing it, where like you can play Resident Evil 4 anywhere and you can also play the remake, is I think like the good way to do this.
Well, I think my point is not so much that the same game, it's the fact that that game came out in 1999.
Yes. 9, yeah, I think.
Why haven't they released it till yet? Made it playable since then? You know, and I think, to me, that's more of what Konami's, like, business goal is. Like, they're not just going to release this game, have a publisher do it for whatever. The answer is, do we not get another Silent Hill, or do we get Silent Hill? Or do we not get the old Silent Hill at all playable, or do we get a version of it, even if it's different? Not from that original one.
And it's like, I'm not saying that the Silent Hill 2 remake or that this new one's going to be bad necessarily. You know what I mean? Like, it's
correct.
To me, it's not about like what the games are, because that Silent Hill 2 remake is good. Yeah. It is good. And I like it. But it's more about just like the principle of like, but they're just not ever going to do this now, I think. Because
correct.
I think I think they just don't have. I think that they think that they don't have to. And I think that they should consider doing it, because I think there's like plenty of different models for them to look at and say like, oh no, this does work and this is a good idea.
Yeah. I also, you know, I just did a quick Google search. There's pretty easy ways to download Silent Hill if you
there
want.
Certainly are. But that's the problem too, where it's like, okay, if I'm going to get in Konami doesn't want me to do this, but they don't want me to have, like, they don't want me to play it then at all. It's like, that's just frustrating.
Right. And I think the bigger conversation, one that we've had before, is this idea of video game preservation, because I don't value old games in the same way that, like, I think some, like, I don't value the old Silent Hill in the way that a Silent Hill fan does. That doesn't mean it shouldn't be accessible for people to buy and purchase. And this is only going to become a problem as we keep moving into the future of video games. Old games are going to be harder to play. The only versions you're going to have to play of them are the newer versions of these games in the future. And even that's not going to be like, can we still even play the Silent Hill 2 remake 20 years from now? Am I going to be able to download that? I don't, who knows?
But even, I mean, to the point you're making, I think it is like, I'm not even saying Konami, you need to spend millions and millions of dollars
just make
to get
it.
A remaster
just do
going.
It. Just
and
do
I know
it.
That that's so much easier to say said than done. And I think that the big problem, especially with Silent Hill 2, I believe specifically, is that they like lost the original source code for it. So it's like literally impossible, which is why that remaster was so weird. But even then, just fucking put that remaster on PS5 and I'll shut the fuck up. Do you know what I mean? It's a bad remaster, whatever, but at the very least it's there and I would play it. But like, that's the frustrating thing where it's like, I'm not saying you need to like spend millions of dollars to do this. I'm saying like you could, if it is just a port or if it is just like on the platform, great. You're not going to, I don't think you should spend millions and millions of dollars to do that because I think that would be a bad return on investment.
Do you think in 2030, that is 5 years from now in June, I'll be able to download and play Mind's Eye wherever I'm at?
No. Something I think else that's kind of interesting about the games industry too is like, I think that we tend to be fine with like a lot of the industry is fine with like games being lost if the game isn't particularly good, which I think is a kind of a shame.
Yeah, because it's still part of the history.
Yeah. Or like, you know, like Concord's just gone forever, 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 forever. It's gone.
Yep.
And it's like, I wish it wasn't because that would be cool to, it's from preservation. Like it's good to be able to have. So
yeah, I agree.
Justin, I think that's going to do it for us. I'll give you a more in-depth Onimusha review next week.
Oh,
I'll hopefully be done with it by then. Okay. I think you would fucking hate this thing.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I think you would get started with it and be like, I'm good.
Yeah.
But it's been fun. It's been a fun thing to tinker around with as a game that like I've heard of but never played.
Ooh, which game do you think I'd hate more? Elden Ring, Night Rain, or Onimusha 2?
Onimusha 2. Without question.
Okay, all right.
Without fucking question. Right, you would I think play 5 minutes and go, no. and then be done. And I don't think you'd be wrong for doing that. I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about like, sort of what we were talking about before about like games that don't hold up. Does that mean they're not good? Like if you, this game wouldn't be made like this today, but so it doesn't like hold up, but does that mean it's bad? I don't think so. I think it's kind of an interesting thing, but also do I think Onimusha 2 is a very good game that I would recommend to anyone? No.
Yeah. But
I'd recommend it to very specific people. If you're interested in what a demon version of Lord Nobunaga looks like.
Oh,
find out.
Okay.
If you want to hear some of the worst voice acting of all time, go ahead and give that a shot. I think that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much for listening. You can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. Thank you to our deluxe Patreon patrons, Jane Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. If you want to support us, patreon.com/hitboxpod. Follow us on Blue Sky @hitboxpod. Rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, anything to add?
Is the remaster like better than the old one, or does it look better graphically?
Just looks better. It's just runs good. I'm playing it on the Switch too. It is an odd little game.
Oh.
But I'm having a good time with it.
All right. Well, that's all I got.
I'm having like a good time with it. Going like, whoa! Why is it like this? It's got that. Oh, it's like an old game that when you play, you're like, whoa, games used to be way fucking different, huh? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people used to put up with a lot of bullshit. So that's what I got. All right, we'll catch you next week. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye.
I'll stop recording.